When I saw this movie for the first time 2 years ago, that scene raised a question in my mind. And I thought about it, that question, I pondered on it for the whole of the Passion Week of that year and didn't come up with an answer. And then last year, again, this question just kept going through my mind. And then again this year, and so I thought I'd do some reading about it and see if I could come up with an answer. For anyone who's seen the movie, you know that just before this scene is the scourging of Christ, his whipping and his beating. And if anyone has seen the movie, you know that it's so violent and it's so disturbing, and it goes for so long that you just can't wait for it to end. And it just feels like it never does. And finally, at the end, when Pilate displays Christ before the people, and when he says, "Behold the man," you feel, looking at him, that Christ has been severely beaten, tortured, and humiliated. And he looks like a broken man. He looks like there's nothing left. And he looks completely harmless. And so when I watched the movie, I noticed on Pontius Pilate's face, when he said, "Isn't this enough? Look at him." And then the Jewish priests and the authorities and the crowd cried out, "Crucify him." I saw a look on Pontius Pilate's face like he didn't understand what was left of the man. I mean, what was left? There was nothing left. Why, on top of all of that, should they also crucify him? I mean, back then, even if they had let him, you know, just let him live and just said that's enough, the chances of him surviving would be almost zero without blood transfusions, antibiotics and, you know, aseptic wound care like we have today. His chance of surviving was almost zero. So why wasn't it enough what they'd done to him? I mean, if that was all that was left of him, why couldn't they just, if they were worried about him, why couldn't they just throw him in prison like they did with John the Baptist? Even Herod didn't want to kill John the Baptist. He was happy to just leave him in prison. If they were worried about him, why didn't they just break his legs? Back then, no orthopedic surgeons, they'd never heal. He'd be a crippled beggar for the rest of his life. Why wasn't that enough? I mean, were they worried about his band of followers? There was no great army. All he had was some poor, uneducated fishermen that used to follow him, and now they don't even follow him. They've all left him alone. One of them has sold him, betrayed him, and now gone and committed suicide. One of them, at least one of them, has denied him, and the only one that's gone all the way into the Sanhedrin, all the way into the council, is the youngest one, John. He's not menacing. So what were they worried about? And that was the question that kept going over and over and over in my mind. Why did they have to kill him? What were they thinking? I mean, we know theologically why Christ had to die. But of course, that wasn't, you know, on the minds of the Pharisees, our salvation. Now, you know, I started thinking about it, and I know it's always said the Jews, they killed Christ because of envy. But I felt that that answer wasn't enough. I mean, envy might, you know, in a moment of extreme envy and rage, you might injure or even kill someone, perhaps. But this wasn't a moment of rage, what the Jews did. This was a very concerted and well-planned plot. I mean, they plotted at length, they gathered together and plotted. They found Judas and paid him a lot of money. They met in the middle of the night. I mean, they got out of bed, the Sanhedrin, the council, at 3 o'clock in the morning in order to meet. They even risked a riot because they knew that many of the people loved Jesus, and so they knew that there was the potential for a riot, and they even were happy to risk that. And then they took him to Pilate very early in the morning, maybe 6:30, crack of dawn. They had him before Pilate. He said, you know, when he heard he was a Galilean, go to Herod. They took him to Herod, anything to kill him. Herod said, go back to Pilate, went back to Pilate. And even after the scourging, and even in the face of the resistance of Pilate, they still pushed to have him killed. And so, again, the question that kept going through my mind was, wasn't it enough? Wasn't it enough what they'd done to him? Why did they have to permanently remove him from the picture and completely neutralize him by killing him? I mean, why did the Jews hate him so much? Now, you know, I'm sure we can all think of examples in the Gospels where it says that Jesus did something, and as a response it said the Jews either wanted to kill him or stone him on the spot, or they plotted to destroy him. Can anyone think of some examples in the Gospels where it said Jesus did something and then the Jews wanted to kill him straight afterwards? Can anyone think of any? I'll start picking on my old Sunday school class if we don't get any answers. Anyone at all? Yep. Beautiful. So the answer was when Jesus went out on the Sabbath to heal the crippled man. And that's true. So Christ's healings on the Sabbath was a major source of contention for the Jewish authorities. Any other things that Jesus did that made you know, straight afterwards the Jews said they want to kill him? Can I think of anything else? When he cleansed the temple. So they said, where did you get this authority from? And then they came together and they said that Jesus has to die. Yes? Yes, when he cured the blind man, you mean the man who was born blind from birth, that's true? Yes. So when they said he was being blasphemous, so the answer was when he claimed to be Christ. So when he said, you know, I am the Christ, just then we heard in the trial, they wanted to kill him. Of course, by that stage of the trial, they had determined that he had to die. So that actually, his claim then when the priest tore his robe, that wasn't like extra evidence, that already decided he had to die. However, there were times when Christ said, my Father and I have been working till now, and they turned to him and said, if you say you're the Son of the Father, you make yourself equal to God. And so they said that was blasphemy, he should die. Yes, when he forgave the sinful woman. So they said, who has the power to forgive sins? And they said, this man must be destroyed. There are a number of situations where Christ did something and they wanted to either destroy him, whatever that means, or immediately on the spot, actually, they wanted to stone him, but he slept out from, he left from the midst of them and managed to escape. However, I think all of those were moments of rage, and I don't think any of those things on their own was enough to make them want to kill Jesus to that extent. You might say that they had a lot of zeal and his blasphemy, as they put it, his blasphemy was reason enough to kill him, but I'd suggest to you that they weren't like St. Paul. St. Paul, when he was punishing the church, he really had holy zeal. He really and truly cared about God. And so he really persecuted Christianity because he felt that was right. But the priests and the Jews, they were very different to that. There wasn't a holy zeal. There was almost no reference to God whatsoever. There was just their law and their way of life. So I kept reading, and I feel that the answer to their immense hatred can be summed up in some verses out of John, which we actually read a couple of days ago. So I'll just read it for you. It's from John chapter 11. It says, Then the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered a council and said, "What shall we do? For this man works many signs. If we let him alone like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and nation." And one of them, Caiaphas, being high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all, nor do you consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, and not that the whole nation should perish." Then from that day on, they plotted to put him to death. Therefore Jesus no longer walked openly among the Jews. I feel that up until this point, this actually occurred immediately after he had raised Lazarus from the dead. He raised Lazarus from the dead. Some people saw it and went and told the Pharisees. And the Pharisees sat down and had this conversation. Now, up until this point, I believe that the Jews didn't like Jesus. They rejected his teaching. They would have rathered he wouldn't have been there. But I don't believe until this point they had made the decision to go to all lengths to have him killed. And I think the key to their extreme hatred is in verse 48. "If we let him alone like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and nation." In some translations of the Bible, our place, they translate as our holy place or our temple, so that the Romans will come and take away our temple and our nation. And I feel that the main problem that was posed to them by Jesus and his teaching was that he threatened the most important things in their life. In actual fact, he threatened their life the way they knew it. Everything that they practiced in their life, he threatened. He threatened their authority. He threatened their power. He threatened their wealth. And he threatened their religious order, the way that they have come to decide that they're going to practice their religion. He didn't threaten really their concept of God, because this had nothing to do with God. But their authority, their power, their wealth, and the way that they had decided was the right way to practice their religion, the rules that they had established. And so in this verse 48, they were actually completely true. They didn't say anything untrue. If they did leave Jesus going on the way he was, they were going to lose everything. It's not an untruth. If they let him keep going, they would lose their power. If they ceased to be corrupt, they would lose their wealth. They would lose their authority. If all the people went after Jesus, they would lose everything that they had. No one would look up to them anymore. They wouldn't be held in higher regard. They would no longer wield the power that they had. If they left Jesus to keep going, then everything that was important in their life would have been destroyed. And therefore, Jesus certainly, with that line of reasoning, had to be killed. Now, what was the error in the line of reasoning of the Jewish authorities? I mean, you know, it happens a number of times in the Gospels by a number of different groups of people that there is a really wrong way to approach a problem or to approach a teaching. I feel that the Jews focused on the consequences of believing a teaching. So you have something put before you, you have a teaching, and you realise that to accept that teaching means that it's going to have certain consequences. And so their mistake was to look to the consequences, decide that that was unacceptable, and therefore look to the teaching and say, "I cannot accept that teaching. I cannot even consider that teaching." You know, it actually has happened a lot of times in the Bible. If you think about a few Sundays ago when we read the gospel of the man who was born blind. And, you know, one thing that really strikes me in that gospel is how clear the mind of the man who was born blind was, and yet how confused the minds of everybody else was. And when he got taken to the Pharisees said, "We know this man is a sinner. So how did he heal you? What happened to you?" That started with the consequence. That started with their desired outcome. Their desired outcome was, this man is a sinner. This man cannot possibly be good. That's what their outcome was. And then they had to go back. So how on earth could this fit in with a man who's not good? And there was such confusion. If you think of Pontius Pilate, he was the same. He was asked to judge, was Jesus guilty or was he innocent? And in coming to make that decision, was he guilty or was he innocent, he looked to the consequences of that decision. Well, the consequences of saying he's innocent was a riot, and he couldn't accept the consequences. Therefore, he went back to the decision and said, "This man's guilty. I wash my hands, I hand him over to be crucified." Last night we read about the Pharisees. It said that some of the Pharisees believed in Jesus, but it says that they feared that if they acknowledged him, they'd be thrown out of the synagogue because they loved the praise of man more than the praise of God. So again, here are people who say, well, if I accept Jesus, the consequence will be I'll be thrown out of the temple. And therefore, coming back to the decision, I cannot accept Jesus. I can't say that he is true. I can't say that he is, you know, my God. I can't say that he speaks the truth. I can't, because I cannot accept the consequences. So the result is that of all of their reasoning was that Jesus truly was a great threat to their way of life. Even though he had been scourged, even though he still looked like he was a broken man, they knew that he still had power in him. They saw that. They must have thought to themselves, can't this man who healed others possibly heal himself? This scourging is not enough. This man is a great threat. This man must die. At all costs, this man must die. And that's what they pushed for, that Jesus had to be killed. I think when we look at all of this in our own life, you know, we know that it's actually human nature that if you try to take something from somebody, they resist. I mean, in actual fact, it's not perhaps human nature, it's animal nature, it's animal instinct. We used to have a dog before our current one, and he had a beautiful nature. He was a beautiful dog. But one day we had a barbecue, there were lots of people, lots of meat, you know, and he could smell the meat all day. And then at the end of the day, all the bones were thrown into a bin, and we all went inside, and he pulled down the bin, and there were lots of chicken bones in the bin. For anyone who has dogs, they know that you shouldn't feed them chicken bones. They can get caught in their throat. They splinter and they can get caught. One of our friends was over, walked outside, saw that he was eating the chicken bones, knew he had a good nature and didn't fear him at all, and went to pick up the chicken bones off the ground to take them from him. And the only time I think I've ever actually known him to be angry is he turned and bit her on the arm. Thankfully, Mum was there, gave her a tetanus injection, swipe of the Medicare card, you know. But that's animal nature. You take something from somebody who wants it and they will bite. And that's what the Jewish authorities did. And so, again, I ask, what is the relevance of all of that to us? I mean, how many times have you heard something said in a sermon that, you know, is contrary to the way you live your life? How many times have you heard a word that pricks your conscience. There's something you're doing that's not quite right. Or maybe when you open the Bible and you read and you feel that there is a message there for your life, that Christ is saying, change something. Or he's saying, you have to stop doing something that you're doing, or start doing something that you're not doing. You have to give up something that's very important to you. You know, I'd have to say that if there are people here who say, that hasn't happened to me, or that hasn't happened for a long time, then that perhaps is a greater calamity, because that means that you're not hearing the voice of God in your life at all. And if you don't hear the voice of God in your life, then God in your life actually is already dead. You don't need to then go and kill him. If you read the Bible every day, you must be getting messages regularly. If you attend the church and listen to sermons, you must be hearing something from God, or else you come and sit, and when someone comes to give a sermon, your ears are shut. You haven't asked for a word. You haven't come to listen. You haven't come to hear the Lord say something to you. You haven't asked him to guide you. You don't feel you need guidance. And if that's the case, then Christ is already dead. You don't even need to take him to Pontius Pilate to kill him. It's finished. But what if your ears were open and you did hear something, and something did prick your conscience, and you did feel there was a message? How do you deal with that? I mean, for example, with the sermons we've had this week, Aborna Jonathan spoke to us about looking after the weak and the poor among us. You know, what if you felt that actually there's something you could do in your life to do that, but you didn't listen to the teaching? Maybe, as Aborna Augustino spoke about, stopping relationships in your life which are damaging, which you know that God doesn't approve of. Would you ever listen to that message and reject it? Isn't that just like killing Christ, saying, I cannot accept the consequence. There is no way I can give up this relationship. It's impossible. There is no way. I have no intention whatsoever of stopping this relationship. And therefore, that teaching I reject. It can't be right. You kill Jesus. Maybe, as Aborna Yaoub spoke about our wealth, the greatest problem facing Christians in the West is our wealth. Would you hear that sermon and say, there's nothing I can do about that. I have no intention. In actual fact, there's nothing wrong with what I'm doing. I'm not going to do it. I'm not even listening to that teaching. It's meaningless. It has no relevance for me in my life. By doing this, by listening to these teachings, by listening to these things that should be moving our heart and rejecting them, means that we are the ones actually standing in the courtyard before Pontius Pilate saying, kill him. Remove that threat from my life. I'm happy the way I am now. I'm happy with my authority and power. You know, I'm happy with my standing. I'm happy with the way I practice my religious life. I mean, how many times do we hear, you know, you don't fast in the right way, or you don't pray in the right way, or you don't serve in the right way. You're doing just a little bit of service, but you should be doing a lot more in your service. You should be doing a really good job, not just a mediocre job. But we say, nope, the time that I set aside each week is enough. I cannot hear any other teaching about it. Then we kill Jesus. I feel that either Jesus is in control of our lives, and we feel very strongly that we hear his word and we do his will, or we ignore him at best and kill him at worst. And I think that with all, you know, with all of the sermons, with everything that we hear, it's important for us to disregard the consequences. Disregard the consequences of the truth. If the truth is that something must be stopped, then it must be stopped. The consequences actually are irrelevant. And I feel that to the extent that we can do that, then we will be justified in our Christian life. And we will actually feel that what the Lord does for us is so great. You know, the disaster of what the Jewish authorities did, they felt that by killing Christ, they would maintain everything they had. Whereas in actual fact, by killing Christ, they lost everything, not even just in the world to come, but in this world. The Romans ended up circling Jerusalem, sieging it, and as Christ said, destroying it so that not one stone was left upon another. And that was in 70 AD. So 1,930 years later, the temple they were trying to maintain still isn't built. It still is rubble. It still has a mosque on the site. So for them, in trying to hold on to what they wanted, to what was important, in actual fact, they lost everything. And that for us should be the warning. I mean, Christ is trying to tell you something, listen to him. Only he knows. And glory be to God forever. Amen.